This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Yesterday, a letter was released from the CIA warning that a U.S. attack against Iraq could make it more likely that Saddam Hussein would adapt terrorist methods, such as the use of chemical or biological weapons. This letter is in sync with private doubts about the Bush administration's rush to war, expressed by some military officers, intelligence professionals, and diplomats. Those reservations were reported in an article yesterday, co-written by my guest Jonathan Landay. He's the national security correspondent for the Knight Ridder newspapers, including the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Miami Herald, and the Detroit Free Press. Landay's article is based on interviews with dissenting officials who work in a number of different agencies. They did not want their names used out of fear of retribution. Before we talk about their reservations, let's start with a summary of the letter from the CIA, which was addressed to the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, Bob Graham.
Essentially, the letter from the CIA, which was written by the deputy director, John McLaughlin, but on behalf of the director, George Tenet, says that the CIA believes that for now, Baghdad is drawing a line short of conducting terrorist attacks against the United States without a conventional, chemical, or biological weapons. In essence, what this letter says is there is no immediate threat, in the CIA's judgment, that Saddam Hussein is going to use chemical or biological weapons against the United States. However, a very interesting part of the letter talks about how if the United States prepares for an attack against Iraq, and should Saddam Hussein conclude that this attack is going to be forthcoming, he might no longer be deterred from using such weapons against the United States, and could even decide at that point to turn biological chemical weapons over to terrorists.
So the assumption there is that the CIA doesn't think he's already turned any of those weapons over to Islamic terrorists.
Exactly. And in fact, even before the CIA letter came out, I heard from somebody by email yesterday saying exactly that. Someone who's in the academic community but maintains very close connections with people in both the intelligence community and the Department of Defense. And he was saying to me that this is a scenario that people are extremely concerned about. The fact that there may not be a threat right now, but if Saddam finds himself cornered with nothing left to lose, then it would be in his interest to provide these weapons to terrorists for use in revenge attacks against the United States.
Now, the letter also says that al-Qaeda leaders sought contacts in Iraq who could help them acquire weapons of mass destruction, and that Iraq has provided members of al-Qaeda with training in the areas of poison gases and bomb making. So how much of a connection is that between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein?
Well, it's very hard to judge given the fact that a lot of this is classified, and the administration has been unwilling to go very far in describing the sources of this information. However, in a recent story that we have written, we have reported that this information, according to our sources, is coming from Abu Zubaydah, who was a senior al-Qaeda operative arrested in Pakistan earlier this year. The thing is that some intelligence analysts are questioning the veracity of Mr. Zubaydah's disclosures because, as they note, it would be in al-Qaeda's interest for the United States to believe that there was a connection because that would feed drive towards a war. That would be a major recruiting tool for al-Qaeda, given the fact that it would, in the minds of many Muslims, confirm a view that the United States policy is one of being anti-Muslim.
Let's look at this information in the context of the article that you wrote yesterday, saying that a lot of people in the military, intelligence, and diplomatic communities have a lot of reservations about the Bush administration's double-time march toward war, and that the Bush administration has been exaggerating evidence of the threat that Saddam Hussein poses, including distorting his links to the al-Qaeda network. In what way did your sources tell you they think the Bush administration has been distorting evidence of the links between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda?
Well, To begin with, people we've talked to agree that there may or have been senior al-Qaeda operatives in Baghdad, but they also point out that there are more senior al-Qaeda operatives in places like Riyadh, Karachi, Paris, London, even the United States, and that in and of itself does not prove a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda in terms of a plot to stage anti-American terrorist attacks. So that is one of the first things that people have pointed out to us. Secondly, it is our understanding from sources that some of the evidence that has been used to make this charge that senior al-Qaeda have been in Baghdad is telephone monitoring of calls made by a senior al-Qaeda official from Baghdad, but to members of his family and friends, and that there is no evidence from that call of any kind of link between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein in terms of terrorist operations.
No, your sources have told you anonymously that they think the Bush administration is filtering information from the intelligence and military community, that the Bush administration is basically only using information that backs up its case in preparing for war. Can you give us an example or two of that?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that the CIA letter tends to substantiate what we were being told, in that the CIA director says, in other words, that they do not see this imminent threat from Saddam Hussein that the administration publicly has been talking about. But beyond that, there are other things that have been brought to our attention. For instance, another public disclosure last week and another CIA report talked about Iraq's attempts to import thousands of high-strength aluminum tubes. And this report points out that while a majority of analysts in the intelligence community believe that these tubes were destined for Iraq's nuclear weapons program, others within that same community disagree and say that these tubes were in fact destined for conventional weapons. The tubes have an anodized exterior, which makes them very smooth and in the opinion of some analysts, extremely useful for making ground-to-ground rockets, not for making high-speed centrifuges that are used in the production of enriched uranium. Now, despite the fact that there is this dispute going on within the analyst community, President Bush has twice, first before the United Nations and then earlier this week in his televised speech to the nation, said categorically that these tubes are destined for use in Iraq's nuclear program. And so, obviously, it's the president's right to decide which view within the intelligence community he's going to adopt. The fact is that he made this categorical statement despite the fact that there is, in fact, this dispute going on as to what these tubes, what the purpose of these tubes is or was.
This is just speculation. But do you have any idea why the CIA decided to make public the information that they did yesterday?
Yeah, I it's conjecture, but it seems to me that the CIA's charter or its purpose is to provide a balanced, even-handed analysis of intelligence to what they refer to as consumers. Those are officials within the United States government, the policy-making branches of the United States government, who use that intelligence to try to make informed decisions on policy. And if you think about it, the fact that the CIA has gone public with some of this stuff seems, at least in my mind and the minds of other people that I've talked to indicate that the CIA believes that this stuff needs to be out there because perhaps there hasn't been even-handed use and dissemination of intelligence, and they want to make sure that there is.
My guest is Jonathan Landay, national security correspondent for Knight Ridder Newspapers. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jonathan Landay, national security correspondent for Knight Ridder Newspapers. He co-wrote an article published yesterday reporting that many military officers, intelligence professionals, and diplomats have serious reservations about the Bush administration's rush toward war. Now, intelligence professionals within the administration who are critical of the administration's position on Iraq also told you that they think the Bush administration is downplaying the potential repercussions of a new war in the Gulf. What are some of their concerns?
Well, senior diplomats are extremely concerned about the impact that an invasion, U.S. invasion of Iraq would have on stability in the region around Iraq. One concern is the impact on Iran. Now, Iran is in the midst of a power struggle between hardline elements and reformists. The fear is that a U.S. invasion would be used by the hardliners as an excuse to accelerate their crackdown on the reformists in Iran. Don't forget now that if there's a U.S. invasion of Iraq, there would then be U.S. troops on two of Iran's borders, Afghanistan and Iraq, that not only would the hardliners use this so-called threat of the United States to accelerate their crackdown on reformers, but could use it to accelerate Iran's own weapons of mass destruction programs. So that's one of the major concerns. Another concern is a serious concern is the impact that an invasion of Iraq would have on the situation between India and Pakistan. Indian officials in recent days have been talking about, in favorable terms, about the Bush administration's new preemptive prevention strategy. And why not? If it's good enough for the United States, why wouldn't it be good enough for India in its dispute with Pakistan over the Kashmir region? The bases of Islamic militants who are fighting in the Indian side of Kashmir are located in Pakistan, and there have been and Indian officials could use a preemptive prevention strategy to hit at those bases while the United States was engaged in Iraq. Such an incident could be the spark to a war that has been threatening to break out between India and Pakistan for nearly a year now. The president of Pakistan, General Pervez Musharraf, has threatened repeatedly that if India was to do such a thing as hit at the militant bases in Pakistan, he would strike back, and he has said that Pakistan's counterattack would not be confined to the Kashmir region. And so you have the potential of a new war between India and Pakistan, both of which are armed with nuclear weapons.
Now, something else you've been hearing from the military, intelligence, and diplomatic communities, and that is that the Bush administration is squelching dissenting views. What are some of the specific claims that have been made?
Well, essentially what we're hearing is not so much that there are dissenting claims, but that there's no evidence really that has been forthcoming that shows that the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction programs are any more advanced or any more threatening than they were before at the end of the Gulf War. The Iraqis have been involved in trying to develop nuclear weapons since the 1980s, and their major problem was coming up with the fuel for a nuclear weapon, either making it themselves or finding it somewhere else. Well, there's no indication that they have been any more successful in that endeavor than they have been over the past decade. They had come very close to developing many of the systems that drive a nuclear weapon, both the conventional explosives, and actually had a weapon design, two weapons designs. But again, were unable to make or find the fissile material that's necessary to drive a weapon. That is still seems to be the case. Even the president admits that when he says that if they were able to find fissile material, it would take them only a year to make a bomb. The fact is, though, that in the most recent CIA report, the CIA states that, but the CIA also states that if they can't get fissile material, it's unlikely that they would be able to build a bomb before the end of this decade, and the last half of this decade. And therefore, there's a note there that's a lot less urgent than what we're hearing from many administration officials.
Intelligence analysts told you that they think they're under pressure to produce reports that support the White House's arguments.
We're hearing that from not only from intelligence types, but also from military and diplomatic officials, that there is a great deal of pressure to produce intelligence analyses that support the administration's agenda. I can't give you specific. We did not come up with any specific examples of this, but this is something that we're hearing from quite a few sources.
Now, I'm wondering if the people who are telling you this anonymously found you, whether they were so anxious to let the public know about this that they found you, or whether you've been calling out and asking them.
In fact, it began with some unsolicited contacts from within the intelligence and military communities, and that's what convinced us to go out and try and see if this was how widespread this feeling was. We can't quantify how widespread it is. You know, there was no statistical data. We didn't do a public opinion survey within the government. Nevertheless, the fact is that we heard consistently from everybody we've heard, and I've heard since the piece appeared from several other people, that this is indeed the case.
What message do you think these people with dissenting views would like to give the American public?
I think the message is that there needs to be a wider spectrum of data presented. That and you hear this also. It's not just from these people. I mean, you listen to some of the lawmakers coming out of their classified briefings on the Hill about all of this, and they're saying exactly the same things, that they haven't heard anything new, that they haven't heard anything that indicates that there's an imminent threat, and that they're far more concerned about the impact of a U.S. invasion on regional stability, as well as, they want to know, what about the day after and the day after that? What happens to Iraq under an American occupation?
Tom Ricks from The Washington Post said on our show a couple of months ago that he had found that the military was particularly cautious about going to war against Iraq because they were afraid of what the consequences might be. Did you find that your sources in the military are concerned about what their people, what their men and women will face if we go to war now with Iraq?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's definitely part of what some of the misgivings are, that there are some fairly scary scenarios out there. However, I don't think that there's anybody we've talked to who would say that the United States military couldn't prevail in an invasion of Iraq. I think what the greatest concerns are, as I said, the day after and the impact that such an invasion would have, not only on regional stability, but on the prosecution of the war on terrorism. There's a great deal of apprehension about that, and not about overstretch, but, for instance, about the possibility that countries that are opposed to an American invasion of Iraq could tighten the taps on intelligence sharing, intelligence that's crucial to the U.S. effort to track down al-Qaeda. The other concern, a very big concern, is the fact that an Iraq invasion could be one of the best recruiting tools that al-Qaeda has had in a long time, particularly if there are high civilian casualties and large-scale destruction as a result of urban fighting. That is especially worrisome to people that we've talked to.
So the people in the intelligence, military, and diplomatic communities who are expressing their skepticism about the evidence that the Bush administration is using in support of war with Iraq, are these skeptics saying, therefore, we should not go to war with Iraq, or therefore, we shouldn't go as quickly?
I think that's the case. I think they think they believe there needs to be far more consideration given to what's going on, and consideration of the widest possible spectrum of potential outcomes, rather than this, what they believe is this attitude of, we can do this, and you know, we don't want to hear any bad news.
Well, Jonathan Landy, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Landy is national security correspondent for the Knight Ridder newspapers. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.